So for this week, we have a mega super obscure show. So this is one of these extra weird cases. It's almost weird to do a podcast about this at all. I don't know who's going to look this up and who's going to ever care what we think about it, this random ass thing. Instead of listening to us, it's probably better if you remember this show just to go watch it. But if you do want to watch it, the way I found out about this, there's this YouTube channel that we go back to sometimes called No Remaining Commercial Potential that just posts older shows from the UK. And they just post interesting stuff because it's stuff that we've never heard of as Canadians. And he just posted this 6-part series called The Dana Dyke Mystery from 1979. Good year, year I was born. So I definitely have not seen this show, and I presume you have not either.
No, but I think I heard about it recently. I had some British people in my office here before Christmas doing wills, and they looked at my poster of Rumpel the Bailey on the wall. They asked me what I knew about him. I said, oh, he's my hero and all this stuff. And they mentioned to me two British mystery shows and said I should watch them. And I think that might have been one of them, because I said I'd never heard of it before. And they mentioned that one of them that they did mention I had heard of, but I can't remember the name of it now. But that one, I think, might have been the second one. And I said, was it around? I said, when was it? And they thought it was around the time of Rumpel. And then one of them corrected themselves and said, no, it was after, which would be right, because I think Rumpel was about the mid-70s, 74, 75-ish, 73-ish, something like that. And this would have been, yeah, just after.
And it even if it wasn't this specifically, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's probably many shows of this era with names like this. I think this is, it looks like it's based on a book called Septimus and the Dana Dyke Mystery, especially to us, again, of, you know, British-y type titles and stuff, right? The Dana Dyke Mysteries, it all sounds similar. But actually, I apologize to anyone listening that I have so little information about this show, but I am looking up now that it appears it may be a kid's show. So that might not be the one that they mentioned. But, well, anyway, I'll just tell you what I know about it, just a little bit that I know. But yeah, on YouTube, it's a 6-part series, and they're all on YouTube. The Dana Dyke Mystery 1979, episode 1-6. So, yeah, feel free to go watch those instead of listening to us. We will not be at all offended. But there's just a very short Wikipedia entry. The Dana Dyke Mysteries, a 1979 British mystery television series, which originally aired on ITV. A former police detective turned Anglican priest investigates strange goings-on in the village of Dana Dyke St. Mary. And then it's just got all the actors. The most notable one, I think, the one that I recognize, is Jonathan Rhys-Davies, who was Gimli the dwarf in Lord of the Rings, but he was also in I, Claudius, which is probably where you would more know him from. And also, you know, a million things. He was in Sliders. He's in all kinds of stuff. There may be other people we recognize, too. I don't know, but that's the only name I recognized.
Yes. Okay.
And for just slightly more information, where did this go? 6 30-minute episodes, Granada presented this thriller serial for children with a vicar as the hero. The Reverend Septimus Treloar, Michael Craig, was a former chief inspector who had put his police days behind him and now operated from his church in the village of Dana Dyke St. Mary. One night, his organist, Mrs. Crowley, Fanny Rowe, was attacked by the church ghost. But as Septimus deduced, what sort of ghost goes around knocking people out? It is thought that the perpetrator may well be after Our Lady's Cup, a religious relic that has been in the church for several centuries. Septimus, what a strange name. Septimus, it's like a Harry Potter name. Septimus is confused, though. Surely no professional thief would come looking for an unremarkable piece of silverware, unaware that it currently resides in a bank vault. In fact, the weasel, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, whatever, we'll find out the plot as we watch it. But, I mean, that was a little more detailed than I expected. It's like, yeah, we'll get to it. But then I thought this was funny. This user review on Internet Movie Database says, a superior cast of well-known British acting talent makes this just about worth your time. For most of us of a certain age, the main draw will be driven by nostalgia. The 6-parter is played out slowly and methodically, as if made for children. But if it was aimed at kids, why aren't there any kids featured in important speaking roles? And why do almost all the expositional scenes happen at the pub? So it probably is for kids, but it's a kid show from 1979 where it's about a vicar and a mystery, and they hang out in the pub all the time. So I don't know. Let's check it out, right? That sounds interesting.
And of course, he's a former cop, so he'd have all those police skills.
Yeah, of course.
Good for him, yo. Seems to me I've seen it before, though, like in another show.
Yeah. And yeah, and then, of course, if it is, you know, I guess that's kind of happened to us before, though. We've watched shows that are like kid shows, and they tend to start out very well. Like the first episode is great, and then it slows down to a crawl. So if that happens, you know, we'll see. There's no guarantee we'll watch the whole thing.
It sounds like Father Brown Mysteries, which are a very big name now on public broadcasting television. But I don't think Father Brown was originally a cop, but geez, it seems to me that place, St. Mary's, all these religious type ones, connections, always seems to happen in a place called St. Mary's. I wonder if there really is a place called St. Mary's over there.
There's probably a bunch of them. It's probably like Linkin Park, you know? It's just like everything has got a St. Mary's. I'm looking forward to seeing how I mispronounce Danadyke. I'm sure that's not right. It's like when I read Archie comics as a kid and I thought Veronica's name was Veronica, or even as a young adult when I read Harry Potter, I'd never heard of the name Hermione. So I was like, Hermione, I guess? I don't know that name. So we'll see. We'll see how Danadyke's supposed to be pronounced, but I'll bet you money it's not like how I'm saying it.
It's definitely not the show that the British people were talking to me about. It had legal ramifications similar to Rumpole. So it definitely wasn't this one. I don't find it's got a whole lot of depth to it, but if I was a kid, about 13, 14, I liked the show. I'd want to watch the whole darn thing.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say, though, is for us, though, even though we only saw the first two episodes, so we have not completed the Danadyke mystery. I knew I was going to say it wrong, and that's how I was saying it wrong, the Danadyke mystery. Yeah, since there is four more episodes, that's kind of a lot. I don't know. Do you think we should just move on to another show next week? I mean, I feel like we did get, like, it was still neat to watch because just anything from that era is cool. And just when they went outdoors and they just walked around and you see the old buildings and stuff, and even just the style of how it's filmed, all of that stuff was cool to see. But I don't think we're going to get, you know, like we got that out of it. As far as just the actual breadcrumb trail of the plot, it really is going pretty slow.
I think you could probably watch the last episode when it would all come together and that's all you'd need to see. I don't really think that this intervening stuff would be all that. I mean, it would be interesting, but I think that the resolution of the whole thing in episode 6 would probably answer everything for you. They would probably give you little snippets of summary that would tie all those other sections together.
Well, you know, we don't have to do that tonight, but we could just next week, we could just watch we could just watch the final episode to wrap this up.
Yeah, why don't we do that and just see if you needed those intervening sections. But I think it's like most mysteries, when you read them, there's a whole lot of little additional information that's given to you to kind of set you off the track. And really all you want to know at the end is what is the resolution. And there's usually some little trick thing at the end that no matter how much you read or you view of those extra details, there's some trick at the end that you couldn't have picked up anyway. And it all comes together in the last episode. And you say, oh, yeah, okay. So they'll introduce some more characters to kind of set you off the track. But it'll all come together in the final episode.
I think it could be the kind of thing, too, that, well, I mean, this definitely does sit in an odd spot that, like, I can't say it's not for kids, but it also doesn't feel like it's necessarily for adults. Like, they really are leading you through stuff quite easily. And, you know, it's not too brutal. No one's dying or anything. But as a kid's show, that's weird. I mean, I guess we've run into this before, that just, you know, British kid's shows are just a lot more staid and a lot more serious. You know, if this was a North American kid show, even from 1979, it would be a lot zanier. You know, it would be like a lot more evident that it's a kid show.
Well, and as I've said many times with kids shows, in American kids shows more so, they have a tendency to dumb it down. Like they have to lay everything out. Whereas this is very, very, very reminiscent of adult mysteries, British mysteries, where they give you a whole lot of stuff. But at the end, you could never figure it out. Never in a million years. There's always some little catch. But they're not dumbing it down here. Like they're really putting out a whole lot of information about the Christian church, the Catholic church prior to the Reformation, you know, and they're bringing in all these biblical references and it giving all this education too about what early medieval churchdom would have been like. So yeah, they, instead of just laying it all out there for you, and they just give you little snippets of all this stuff. Very, it's a very mature child show. Let's put it that way.
That's kind of a thing too. I mean, as far as like you were saying with the information about church stuff, but also maybe even just the nature of a mystery story. Like traditionally, I do always think of mystery novels, you know, it's like one of those genres that, I mean, there are mystery shows and there are mystery movies, but it's like the one that seems like it most belongs in a novel form. And in that way, like if it is slower and the pacing is slow and they're kind of doling out information, I feel like that works better in a book, you know, like you can really just get into the setting and you just kind of get ensconced in the world. And unfortunately that can sometimes translate onto the screen as a slow pace, you know, of just things going very slow. Because this is absolutely a case similar to Children of the Dog Star that we watched. Like, I'm sure this didn't need to be six episodes. Three would have been plenty. You probably could have done it in a trim too, you know. But it's probably one of those cases of like you get a nice production going. You gotta, you know, you might as well get six episodes out of it. But storytelling wise, that might not be the best.
So let's view the last episode. Because isn't that what we did with Children of the Dog Star? Didn't we kind of jump ahead anyway and watch the last?
Yeah, we did. And it was for the best in that case, definitely.
Yeah. And all the resolution came in the last show. You saw everything you needed to see. So I think this will probably work in this one, too.
Yeah. Apologies in advance to fans of the Dane Dyke mystery that we're skipping the middle part. You know, we're horrible slackers. Let's just go with that. But I did, when I was doing a little research, I saw that another channel, Classic British Telly, actually posted this show 4 months ago. So if I'd been following that channel, I would have found this earlier. And on that channel, it has a lot of views. It has 119,000 views in the last 4 months. It's one of their most viewed videos. So this seemingly sort of obscure, forgotten show, I think I was wrong about that. People do remember this show. Like, that's a lot of views for a old British show, you know? So yeah, it's more popular than I thought it was. So to anyone who is a deep lifelong fan. Yeah, I apologize that we're going to skip to the end, but we're going to skip to the end.
Well, if I had been a kid watching this and it was a weekly thing, oh yeah, I would be looking forward to the next week of watching the show because it does have some depth to it. It's not just some inane piece of crap that's being put out there for some kid to watch because they figure you're just a kid and you're too stupid to know anything anyway. It's got a whole lot of depth to it. And as I say, they're not dumbing it down. They're not treating kids like they're stupid. Even those kids in the little classroom there, those little children were asking questions. And when the young fella said that, well, Jesus could turn water into wine, he could turn it into Coke if he wanted to. You know, you're like, hey, kid, you're right on. You're pretty freaking smart.
That reminds me of a story that I read in like the second grade in French school, but it was about, you know, like the magical land of like, oh, wouldn't this be wonderful? Like a kid's dream. And one of the things, well, it was that carrots tasted like candy. And I was like, yeah, maybe I'm a little on board with that. But then it was that like the water in the river tasted like lemonade. And even as a kid, I was like, that's a little strong, isn't it? That's a little much. Sometimes you just want a glass of water. Like what kind of lunatic just wants all the water to be lemonade? So even at 8 years old, I was like, I don't know about that. Just a random thing that I had forgotten about till just now. But like you're saying too, that's another thing that's just different about how things are now. that, yeah, I think it would make a big difference if we watch this just one episode a week. That's kind of the log jam we're hitting here, is because we're on the internet, all the episodes are available. We'd have to just sit here for 3 straight hours and watch this. Like, that's not how it was intended to be watched. And it doesn't hold up to that kind of, that's too much. So yeah, if we just split it up a little, chop out the middle parts, I think that's reasonable enough.
It also was done with weekly episodes ending on a high note or a questionable note. It leaves the viewer in suspense for a week. It gives you a week of thinking, I wonder who did it. What is that all about? You know, whereas if you're watching it just one after the other, you don't really have time to think or have that feeling of suspense that, who is that guy? What's his connection here? I don't like that guy. You know, that weekly episodic thing gives you the ability to think about things and to look forward to what you're going to see in the next week, which you lose in watching episode upon episode. That's just like watching a bunch all together and you just want to see the end.
I agree. So, all right, let's fast forward then. Broop. All right, so for us, it's a week later. We took a week off, and now we're going to hop in and finish the Dane Dyke mystery. And because it is, definitely not needed for this to be 6 episodes. We watched the first 2, and like, yeah, you can, man, they're pulling it like taffy. It is, they're really stretching this thing out. So we figured we'd jump to the end, but to be fair to the show, I didn't want to just skip ahead in case we miss all kinds of great stuff. So during the week, I hopped in and watched the middle episodes. So I'll give you a quick recap of just what we missed in these episodes, and trust me, it'll be quick. But before we do, if you could go into the directory where I put these shows for us, remember how when I read the summary, it said this was a show for kids? And we were having a little bit of a hard time figuring out what was going on with that, because it is a very simple show and the characters, the way they talk, is very forthright and direct, and I could see it being a kid show, but it's also very dry and serious and adult feeling. And this just confuses things further, because if you click on the little clip I uploaded, that season 1, episode 3 clip, this is the first thing that happens in episode 3.
What the fuck do you call that, Septimus?
Same as mine, isn't it? Steak and kidney pudding, Brussels sprouts, mashed potatoes.
I'll tell you what that lot is. Stodge. Pure, unadulterated, 100% stodge, is that?
So did you catch what that guy just said?
He said, fuck. What the fuck is this?
What the fuck is all this? So, I mean, I get that this is a British show from 1979, but surely in a kid's serial, the guy wouldn't say that, right?
I wouldn't think, but
I think that's the only swear word in the whole thing, but it's a pretty heavy one. And like, I was like, wait a minute, what did he just say? And I rewound it. What the fuck is all this? So anyway, that doesn't clear anything up. That just, if anything, that's just more confusing. So is this for kids or not? In Britain, are they really that hardcore that kids shows were just like, and it's a throwaway line. It's just like banter between them of like, oh, I hate this. You always eat the weirdest food, you know, Padre. What the fuck is this? So I don't know what to say about that, but I thought it was worth clipping to show you that part.
Okay.
So to quickly recap, so the story of this is it's a priest who used to be a police officer, and strange doings start happening around his parish. And at first they think maybe it's a ghost, but it's like, yeah, it's clearly not a ghost. Somebody ransacked the place and knocked out this secretary who works there. And they realize that it's these two guys, Armchair and the Major, who are trying to find the Dane Dyke goblet. It's like a historical relic that's not even that valuable, but suppose, well, I don't know. They say it's not that valuable, but then they say it will be to a collector because it's one of a kind. And then they say this supposedly touched the lips of the Virgin Mary. That seems pretty goddamn valuable to me. So I don't know how valuable this thing is.
Yeah, but isn't it just a replica that they've got in the church, and the original is supposedly stored in a bank or a vault or something somewhere?
Yeah, so basically all that happens in these middle episodes is they just keep researching and learning more about it. And supposedly the real thing is hidden somewhere in the parish, in the church. So it's a lot of research, and then the two evil guys just periodically show up and ransack the place again. So that's basically what happens in episode 3. But to up the ante, Armchair, the big mean guy, who is, you know, the famous dude, Gimli from Lord of the Rings, he kills the priest's dog. So that's a downer at the end of episode 3. But then episode 4 is, talk about stretching things out. Episode 4 absolutely doesn't need to exist, because what happens in episode 4 is the priest has to put this whole thing on hold because two of those younger characters that are in the show are getting married. And he's like, well, we can't put it off. I promised them. And it's literally just him marrying them. Episode 4 is the marriage episode.
Oh, my God.
I know, right? Then episode 5, they get back to, this is where the priest is really figuring out that supposedly the real Dane Dyke goblet thing is actually in the church. And he goes to get it out. But basically, we'll start there, because something finally happens at the end of episode 5 where he goes to retrieve the goblet. Oh, and they do also mention that that guy Armchair, the big bruiser, back when the priest was a police officer, he's the one who put that guy behind bars, but only got him for manslaughter when he really should have been behind bars for life for murder. But
so the guy's got a vendetta against the priest.
Yeah. The end of that episode is where stuff finally happens. So we can hop in right there.
Okay.
A strange series of events begins at St. Mary's Church, Dane Dyke. Septimus Trelaw, the rector at St. Mary's, and also an ex-police detective inspector, tries to unravel the hidden secret of the Greek inscriptions on an old abbot's tombstone. The manuscripts reveal that the Dane Dyke Cup, a valuable church relic missing since the Middle Ages, is hidden somewhere in the relic chapel at St. Mary's. Septimus is ambushed at night by two villains known as Armchair and the Major, who tear the relic chapel apart without discovering the priceless relic.
Oh my God, that was terrible. I thought they'd have some trick, some secret, some real high climax. And just getting shot in the arm is not it. Boy, I'm very disappointed in that ending.
Yeah, I think this is not at all, you know, a bad thing on your part, but definitely I think you were giving this show way too much credit because as we were watching, you were like, all right, so maybe, you know, this kid who keeps showing up, I was saying like, what is the point of this kid who doesn't have his shoes and stuff? Who cares? And you were like, ah, but he also misplaced some stuff in that other episode. Like, it'll all come together. It'll be something. And then when they're tied up on the boat, you were like, oh, okay. While they were left alone with the cup, they definitely took the cup out. So now the cup's not in the container anymore, but the bad guys don't know. And it's like, oh, nope. Turns out that didn't happen. Then you were like, wow, but maybe what about that police chief guy who said the swear word? Maybe he's the head guy who's dealing with all this. That would be cool. You don't expect that guy. But no, it's just a random Swedish man we never met before. So yeah, it's like you're just giving this story way too much credit because nothing interesting happened at any point.
Well, no, because usually in these, there's some little catch, something that you couldn't possibly figure out or you couldn't possibly know. And they tell you that and you say, oh, yeah, if I had thought of this and that and they all come together. But none of that happened. It's just some Swedish guy who's got lots of money who wanted to steal the cup. That's all. And it wasn't even that exciting an ending. I mean, he just rolls up in his little small boat. And here's this giant boat beside him. Hand it over. And they do. Come on. There'd be at least a fight or and you know, he shoots him with it. He'd do more than that. Have his buddies on board beat the living tar out of those two and throw them in the water. Get rid of them. Get rid of the evidence. There was none of it. He just hands it over and off he goes.
Even the priest's plan, was not especially clever either. He's just like, hey, you know, we got the major. If the major gets arrested, he'll tell on you. So I'll just make sure that, you know, I don't even care if the major gets arrested. I'll let him go, frankly. Just give me the stupid cup back. It's like, geez, okay. I mean, just let's go straight to negotiations and let's just come out to a reasonable outcome. Like,
yeah. And the guy's got a super boat, right? He's got money. He's got the boat. He's got the cop, presumably. The cop was in that case. All he'd have to do is take off in his great big giant boat and go into some international water somewhere where he couldn't be arrested anyway. And he's not even British. So he probably could get away with some kind of extradition or something in his own country, you know, beat that and can get rid of those two on the boat on the little boat who know what's going on because nobody else knows. Like, oh, man, that was so disappointing.
Yeah, it's definitely not one of those cases where, you know, it's always so impressive when you feel like the author has thought about every little detail and every possible outcome, and then they snake their way through in a different way even than you would think of. This is the reverse of that. Whoever wrote this didn't think about anything, you know? You know what it made me think of? This is a completely different topic, but like, you know, if you had mentioned this to whoever wrote this story back in the 70s, maybe they'd go like, oh, you know, that's a good point. Oh, yeah, I could have done this or that or the other thing. It made me think of Harry Potter and how just what a wet, boring thud that story ended with, how predictable and boring the ending was, where other people online brought up all this stuff about Harry being, you know, I don't think they call him the chosen one, but whatever they call him, the boy who lived, you know, the one special dude who could stop Voldemort. People figured out that if you line up all the stuff that makes Harry special, do you remember there was that other kid, Neville Longbottom? Anyway, he's just a big dopey kid. But as the series went on, the actor that played him in the movies, you know, kind of got tall and handsome. And people figured out, they're like, you know, all the stuff from Harry also applies to Neville. It's going to be so cool at the end when they reveal that the actual chosen was Neville Longbottom the whole time. And then, of course, it wasn't. It was just Harry Potter because she didn't think about that when she wrote it. But I bet you dollars to donuts that when she read that theory, she was like, oh, damn it, that is better. I should have done that. Anyway, that just made me think of that because, yeah, you could say that 8 different ways about the Dandek mysteries. Like, oh, anything would have been better. Darn it.
And they kept doing things that were kind of, you kept thinking, oh, there's got to be something there. They kept showing that statue with the morose face from all kinds of different angles. Like, okay, couldn't you have tied something in with that statue? Like, why was he so morose looking? Like, was there some other secret little button or something on him? It wasn't even anything like there was a magic little place that so that the back would open or anything like that. No, he had to, the rector there had to get out a little chisel and cut a little box out. There was the cup because he had seen it in a book somewhere. Like, pretty freaking late. And what was that with the kid not losing his shoes all the time? Yeah, what was that all about?
Yeah, I think really, in a way, this story, it's kind of, it's too pedestrian for its own good, how it started with the idea that it could be a ghost, but that was like literally the first few minutes, and then everything else was just very plain and serious the whole time. Maybe that would have saved this story, because yeah, when you mentioned about the statue, I was kind of thinking like, but I don't know, what could the statue do? Shoot lasers out of its eyes? You know, I don't know, but it would be awesome if it did. And then when they were left behind with the goblet, I started thinking of the goblet of immortality or whatever from Indiana Jones. Like, what if because they have the sacred goblet, what if they drank water out of it and it gave them superpowers? Like, none of this shit would fit with the story at all, but at least it would be something interesting, you know?
Even if they had done something with that statue, like if they had pushed on his eye, then the back would have opened something. But, you know, to get a chisel out and open up the back because you saw it in a book somewhere, like, oh, come on. They needed to give us something a little more exciting. Somebody who, usually these things are the person that you would not have suspected is the mastermind behind it all. There was nothing. There was some Swedish dude, some rich guy. Well, we never were introduced to him originally anyway, so you could never have put two and two together. It would have been better if it had been that master cop, the one who swore about the food that he had to eat. He had somehow something tied into it somehow.
that would have been really cool too, because then that would have made his swearing like a clever detail, you know, like he's just so out of the ordinary in this story. He's like the weird canary in the coal mine of that something is wrong here because this guy's swearing in a kid's show. You know, like that would actually be a really neat tip off.
Well, thank God I didn't have to watch 3, 4, and 5, because obviously there was nothing there. There would have been nothing in those episodes that would have been a clue that I missed. And that's usually why you have to watch all of them. There is some little thing in those episodes that are dragged way out that if you had paid attention to it, you would have been able to figure it out, but you couldn't have in this one.
Yeah, and I mean, you also got, you know, you got the recap at the start, so you got all the highlights anyway, and you even got to see the wedding that you missed. We got a wedding part two, wedding redux at the end, so...
Yeah, whoopee.
Yeah, I really get the feeling. We said this same thing about Children of the Dog Star, but it must be, you know, when you get a production off the ground, you know, it's quite a bit of work to get a TV show going. It probably just isn't worth their time if it's only one or two episodes, you know? So, I mean, that's probably the only reason why this was 6 episodes. It was like, we got all the actors, everyone's under contract, we got all the filming people, we got this, everything's going. It's just as easy to make 6 episodes as it is to make 2. And just financially, we need to make 6. That's the only reason that was 6.
Well, and then too, we as TV movie viewers, whatever, have seen so many of these shows where there's usually some little secret at the end that we could never have guessed. That we've become quite hardened. So when you do see something like this that has a very simple type resolution, you're like, oh man, like, come on, couldn't you have given me a little more? Because you're so used to seeing so many of these that there is always some secret, some person that you've been introduced to that really is the bad guy or the mastermind behind it all. That when you do see something that has a, hey, you know, give us back the cup and we won't tell anything. We'll just let you go. Like, you're like deflated. You're like, oh, God, come on. There's got to be something more in depth to this thing. And yet there isn't.
I suppose it is a lot more realistic, though, because, yeah, like the famous guy nowadays for the twist ending is that M. Night Shyamalan guy who he had a couple of really clever Sixth Sense, you know, movies. But then he kind of hurt his own career because he just abused the idea of the twist ending so much. This is the opposite of that. This is like, yeah, this is probably what would happen. He's just some art consortium guy from Sweden who you never heard of before and you never met earlier in the story. He's just some guy. It's like, yeah, okay, maybe it is more realistic that it's just some guy. But this is a story. This is supposed to be entertaining. So anyway, there's the Dane Dyke Mysteries.
And besides that, let's talk about this Swedish guy. This guy is loaded, obviously. He's got that great big fancy boat. He's gone to all this effort of hiring these two villains who wreck the church and kill a dog and threaten people and tie up people and steal and everything else. He's hired these two. And yet at the end, he just hands, and this cup presumably is extremely valuable. He just hands it over. Oh, I don't want to get in trouble. Here you go. And that is probably what would happen in the real world, maybe. But
yeah,
I don't know. I'm very disappointed. I was looking for something deeper.
Yeah, maybe for these, because I still like the idea of just watching random old shows from the past. And not only is this one from, you know, several decades back, but it is from a different country than us as well. So, I mean, on that level, I always find these things interesting. But yeah, maybe I'll try to find more kind of just one-off episodes. Because yeah, the mini series is a big, and then we skipped half of it and it was still annoying. Like the mini series is quite a big thing to commit to when, there's really no guarantee that it's going to work out. And hey, if nothing else, should it ever come up again, now I know how to pronounce Dane Dyke. I definitely didn't know that before. So there we go. I got something out of it.
But in its defense, it had, I mean, storyline, forget it. It fell all apart on that one. But it had so many things that were interesting. It had a beautiful scenery. Those scenes in the church were just exquisite. It really took you back to the late 1970s. The clothes were, well, of course, it was made in this era, but the clothes were just perfect. They put a whole lot of effort into creating the atmosphere of this thing, and then it just didn't go anywhere.
Oh yeah, and I almost forgot. I keep forgetting to bring this up, but I love the opening. The little animated opening is very nifty and very cool. And even though they play that theme song too many times, it's a nice little ditty, you know, like.
Yeah, it was good. That was interesting.
Very cool animated opening. Thumbs up to that.
Okay.
All right. Well, fare thee well, Dane Dyke. Back to the misty moors of the past for you. You know?